When I was presented with the Laura Ingalls Wilder Award, I was struck once again with the revelation that drawing changed the trajectory of my life. More than that, actually, drawing changed me. I was born in 1939, smack in the middle of a family of eight, and in the middle of another turbulent era in American history. The country was still recovering from the Dust Bowl. The Great Depression was finally ending, and World War II was just beginning. All children were subjected to air raid drills during the school day, interrupting our studies with the presence of fear and the threat of menace. But no matter what was going on around me, I always found time to draw. In interviews, I'm often asked the question, how did you become the artist you are today? And many times I'm invited to share drawings from my youth or a photograph of me as a kid in the act of making art. I always had to respond that, unfortunately, I had nothing to offer up. I had no sketches saved from those hours of sitting on the living room floor in the nook underneath the piano, and no photos of the doodles my father allowed me to make on the wall next to my bed. I had no high school assignments tucked away in drawers, no prints from printmaking studio at the Philadelphia Museum School of Art, had nothing to share from my early history of making pictures, nothing that speaks to that passion. Why didn't I save any of that stuff? The simple reason is that I never thought that I could be an artist, or not a real one anyway. So what would be the point of holding on to anything? Growing up in Philadelphia in the 1940s, I was very much aware of racial separation. While segregation would not release its hold on the South, in the North, Jim Crow tightened its grip. Our house was on a dead-end block of row homes with African-American neighbors who migrated from the South during the Great Migration. But each day, as I took a left off East Earlham Street toward my all-black elementary school, all-white neighborhoods and factories surrounded our community. In Philadelphia, you didn't see those powerful degrading signs, whites only or colored only, that you'd experience in other parts of the country. It was more like being assigned a role, a prescribed way of being. I lived out those days with the coding, you can and you can't. Art was definitely a can't. Not only were there no artists in my family, but in those early years, there were no models of such a career in my universe. I got the sense echoed again and again that a person of color should not consider art as a useful endeavor for the future. Instead, we were limited to the armed services or trade labor. Though I initially accepted that construct, my drawing never stopped. If anything, the need and desire to create only increased, and I was fortunate to have mentors, strong arms lifting me up. My mother, who loved to read, always encouraged me to be true to myself. And my father, a jack of all trades, who drew great satisfaction from working with his hands, hanging wallpaper and making over houses, brought home squares of leftover patterned paper from his job so I could sketch on the reverse sides. My grandfather worked at a pencil factory located at the end of our block, so pencils were never in short supply. They were simple tools, but they were all I needed. Spending hours doodling on my own, I learned I could transform my environment through the act of making something. In creating, I could remake the world however I wanted. Later, as I became more dedicated to drawing, Dad provided me with my own sketchbooks, and I took a pad of paper everywhere, even to my job. At 13, I had been hired to sell newspapers at a stand located at the busy intersection of Germantown and Sheldon Avenues. And in between barking, "Get your daily newspapers here," at passersby, I drew. I sketched people waiting on the corner for a trolley or bus, always working quickly so as not to lose a sale. But my boss, a Mr. Matt Schaumburg, was always supportive. And when it was really slow, he didn't mind if I shaped that time with longer, more focused pieces. I would perch on the edge of my newsstand shelf and draw the display mannequins in the department store window on the corner. And that's how I met my first professional artist. I had a regular customer named John Liney. And one day when he saw me drawing, he asked if I would share my work with him. It was only after flipping through my sketchbook that he revealed that he, too, loved to draw, and that, in fact, his syndicated comic strip, Henry, ran in the very newspapers I was selling. Mr. Liney invited me to visit his studio nearby, and I often stopped by to see him at work. Could that be where the idea of mini pictures telling his story was seeded for me? I also always had teachers who stoked my artistic drive. Upon graduating from Roosevelt Junior High, I elected to attend Dobbins Vocational Technical High School, where I would keep my creative flame burning and major in commercial art. One of my mentors during my freshman and sophomore years was Mr. Sam Brown, a colorful and devoted teacher who was also African American. How uplifting that was for me to see a respected, successful man who came from my community and believed in my abilities. Besides teaching, Mr. Brown also ran a sign painting shop, and he hired me to work alongside him after school and over summer break. Now, keep in mind that I am dyslexic, so I struggle with words from a young age. Picture this teacher employing a dyslexic kid to paint signs. Now, that's real support. Dobbins was also where I met Gloria Jean when we were magically partnered at a Valentine's Day dance. That was the beginning of what would come to be the great partnership of my life. She encouraged me then, and all these years later, her support is still the rock that I lean on. However, not everyone had the same faith in my abilities back then. I had a different art teacher during the second half of high school, a man who had always graded on a level playing field, giving fair grades based on talent and hard work. Instead of A pluses, his big thing was to give A's with hand-drawn wings on each side as marks of excellence. In my senior year at Dobbins, the Philadelphia Board of Education announced it would award 3 scholarships to art majors from the city's competitive high schools. I thought I had a good shot. After all, I had received quite a few A's with wings, certainly more than my fellow students. Yet, when it was time to apply for college scholarships, this teacher doled out applications to only the white students. Though he believed I had talent and had held up my work as a model, I understand now that this was his way of putting black students, such as myself, on notice to rethink the idea of art as a career. He wasn't alone either. My father, who had bought me my first sketchbook and had found ways to enroll me in art classes, joined the naysayers. He believed that when high school ended for me, so would my focus on art. In fairness, how was he to know that there was a future in art for his son when he was not aware of African Americans working in that field? Both my father and my teacher were trying to spare me what they envisioned would be too tall a hurdle to clear, too hard a fall. It was that old misguided refrain again. You can't have this. This is not for you. I myself did not fully believe in my ability to succeed professionally in art, but I sure knew how it made me feel in the act of making it. Art was my safe harbor, and the joy of making pictures centered and comforted me. It was the only thing I could imagine doing. I thought of those other supporters whose hands had lifted me up, my mother, my boss, Matt Chamber, the cartoonist John Liney, and my former teacher, Sam Brown. I carried their voices with me, spurring me on as I entered the guidance counselor's office. I left with a scholarship application I had been denied, and then I made sure that all of the other black students in my class had them too. That year, out of the 3 scholarships awarded, Dobbins received 2 of them. I was granted a full scholarship to the art school of my choice, which, back then, was $1,600 for 4 years of tuition. If you can believe it, my best friend, who was also African American, received the second scholarship. After graduation, I found myself at the Philadelphia Museum School of Art. There, I learned that art school wasn't about becoming an artist. I already was an artist. I just had to let it play out. Going forward, the making of art would be my only objective. The process is where I would live. Once I chose to burrow into the pursuit of craft, that elusive art career came more naturally than I had imagined. 5 years after leaving the Philadelphia Museum School of Art, I was working at Barker Black, an illustration and design studio in Boston, Massachusetts. One of the projects that came into the studio for me was a picture book called The Adventures of Spider with Little Brown. I completed the drawings for that first dummy, and that was it. I was hooked. In creating picture books, a new world opened up. The book itself became my muse, a vessel that could hold all the joy and sadness of my growing up years, all the triumphs and tragedies. By using my personal history, the work became more layered, the drawings more meaningful. Art became the bridge that carried me from the past I wanted to escape from into the world I wanted to inhabit. My childhood was limited, but I learned that through my own creativity, the world was limitless. That first discovery was long ago. Since then, I've spent countless hours at my drawing board. I can only imagine how many tubes of watercolor, brushes, pencils, and sheets of paper I have gone through. All have been key ingredients in a rich stew of visual storytelling, be it a folktale, fairy tale, a Bible story, a fable, a poem, or a nonfiction piece. My intent has always been to awaken the emotional palate, to make viewers laugh, cry, ponder, and most of all, to feel compassion. And after 50 years of illustrating books, it is incredibly meaningful to receive an award for what they tell me is, quote, making a lasting contribution to literature for children, end quote, while doing something I always needed to do for myself. All along, I was drawing my dream. Spending so many years working toward this dream has created a deep well of thank yous to my family, first and foremost, especially my parents, Willie Mae and James. Though initially it was hard for my father to accept my career path, and he rarely asked about my work when he was alive. After he passed away in 1999, I was surprised to hear my sisters recall how he had raved about his successful son, the artist. I still credit him and my mother for planting those first seeds of creativity and drive in me. My deepest thanks go to my wife, Gloria Jean, an author in her own right, who is my soulmate and cornerstone, for her love, encouragement, prayers, and spirited counsel over 56 years of marriage, and even longer as the best of friends. And to my 4 children, 9 grandchildren, and 1 great-granddaughter. That great affection extends, of course, to my extended family, whose welcome presence has made my smile a little wider and my love of family even stronger. To all the mentors and special individuals who have championed me, who watered the seeds my parents planted to help me grow, my sincere gratitude. 2 years ago, I found out that my teacher, Sam Brown, the one with the sign painting business, had also been a watercolorist. In 2014, the Philadelphia Museum of Art acquired the jacket art for my Caldecott Honor book, John Henry, for an exhibition entitled Represent 200 Years of African American Art. Imagine my surprise when I attended the opening and saw my high school teacher's painting displayed along the same wall as my own. As it turns out, Mr. Brown had been a respected and well-acknowledged painter in the 1930s, but had never shared his passion with me. Is it possible that Mr. Brown simply gave up, or that his own hurdles were too high? It makes me all the more grateful for the continued professional encouragement I have received throughout my career from the authors who have allowed me the opportunity to provide the visual storyline to their texts, and from my publishers who have given me so much creative freedom. Dial Books, with its rich history, has been a long-term home, and from my very first book published in 1964, I've also had a steady and fruitful collaboration with Little Brown. Fortunately, that first book was just the beginning, and since those early days, I have worked on over 100 titles. I learned about bookmaking and the craft of storytelling from three of the best and most dedicated citizens of children's literature: publisher and editor Phyllis Fogelman, art director Atha Tehan, and publisher and editor David Ruther. My longtime editors, Andrea Spooner, Lori Hornick, and Ann Schwartz, along with art director Lily Malcolm, also warrant special recognition for their diligence and attention over the years. In truth, there have been many, many people working together to make my books a reality, and each of those individuals deserves a shout-out, but they are far too numerous to list here. For now, let me acknowledge all the editors and art directors and all the people who make up the production, marketing, publicity, and sales teams that bring my efforts into being. To my agent, Shelley Fogelman, for his guidance and friendship for the past 25 years. In order for me to be at my best, I need a sense of clarity on how to navigate every aspect of bookmaking management. And he has shepherded my career through all of the twists and turns in the ever-shifting world of publishing. I want to thank the American Library Association for this tremendous recognition and for the commendable work done by its members. Above all, these awards demonstrate a continued commitment to putting books in the hands of young people, paving the way for the next generation of readers and thinkers who will change their world and impact ours. They will need our attention and support to find that vision. And the timing has never been more critical. We have our work cut out for us, all of us. I'm saddened that we still have too many children waking up in a world where the odds are stacked against them, where they don't feel safe in their own communities. This year, I've had the opportunity to visit with many elementary school students and witness some of the most dedicated and caring staff doing their best to meet the challenges of our time. Just recently, I spent time with Matthew, a first grader who loves to draw. Since I was presenting to the second grade at his school, and Matthew wouldn't get to experience my talk, a thoughtful, instructional coach invited him to share his art projects with me as I had lunch. Matthew comes from a difficult home life, and though labeled as a troublemaker, I found him articulate, smart, and talented, with an infectious smile. It was obvious he was using his art as refuge. Later, I sent Matthew a package containing some of my books, along with drawing pads and pencils. But it was the instructor's attention that filled my heart with hope and optimism. Librarians and teachers have the most important job, in a sense. For kids like Matthew, they are the keeper of dreams, the dispensers of possibility. That was certainly true for me growing up. So, to all the people who have supported me through the years, who have opened my books and shared them with others, thank you for your belief in me. It is you who I have felt nudging me to always stay true to drawing my dream.